Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Fueling Forward podcast. I'm your host, registered dietitian, and former professional runner, Maddie Alm. Today's episode is a special episode where I'll be recapping my experience at the New York City Marathon. I hope you enjoy hearing all about it. Hello, everybody. Happy Friday. I hope everyone has had a great week. I'm so excited for today's episode. I am just going to be talking all about New York. And then this is the last time you guys ever have to hear about it. So don't worry. After that, we'll be back to regularly scheduled programming. But I have been talking about my buildup to New York and my goals for New York for so long that I just wanted to kind of reflect on the race, talk all about my fueling approach, and just generally give you guys some insights into what it's like running a major marathon, because there were a lot of things that I expected and a lot of things that I didn't expect. And it was overall very positive experience. So I'm really excited to kind of dive into that today. And before I get into New York itself, I want to just take a minute and thank everybody who made a donation. As a charity runner for Track Girls, my goal was to raise $4,500 by the marathon. And I ended up raising about $4,800 thanks to generous donations from listeners like you. So thank you so much if you supported my fundraising efforts. Just know that was so greatly appreciated. I'm working on emailing everybody individually, but it's going to take a little while. So thank you again for any contributions and just for following along on this journey, even if you weren't able to donate. It means a lot to have people invested in this like I am. So thank you for being here. And of course, last but obviously not least, thank you so much to Hedda's and to Track Girls for the opportunity to run the New York City Marathon, without who I never would have been there. So thank you so much for giving me that opportunity. And without further ado, let's talk about New York. All right, so we're going to talk about the whole thing, the trip, you know, Thursday through Monday. So buckle up. It's going to be a bumpy ride. Not really, actually. Everything was great. But I will say it started out a little bumpy. Thursday morning, our flight was at 8 a.m. out of LAX, and we're about an hour away. And we had to drop our dog off at the dog sitter. And so we had to leave our apartment around 5:30 in the morning. And so it's dark, of course. And Nick, my husband, had taken the dog outside while I was bringing my suitcase down to the car. And we live in an apartment, and we have a parking like garage underneath our building. And we have this really brutal set of cement stairs on the side of our building to get down to the parking lot. And I'm wearing these like really fun pants. So I got these, if you're interested, if you're looking for some type of like, not athleisure, they're like nicer than athleisure, but they're just as comfortable. They're these kind of like wide leg ribbed pants. They're awesome. I got them at Buck Mason, which is a new store I've learned about recently out here. They're great. But they're these kind of wide leg, stretchy-ish pants. And then I was wearing these like Chelsea boots. And I'm walking down these brutal stairs carrying my suitcase in one hand and something in the other hand. And my boot from my left leg catches in the pant leg of my right leg. And I folded like a lawn chair and fell down the stairs. So 5:30 in the morning, just making a huge racket. Nick had just gotten back from taking the dog out. He hears everything. He thinks I just dropped my suitcase down the stairs. Nope, I was attached to it. So as I fell, my right leg was folded beneath me, and the top of my foot got pinned between the edge of the cement stair and my full body weight as I fell backwards onto my leg and then bounced forward onto my face. And thankfully, I was only like four stairs from the bottom, so it wasn't a very far fall. But when I stood up, I couldn't put any weight on my foot. And I was like, you have got to be kidding me. One, I just fell down the stairs. I don't think I've ever fallen down the stairs in my life. And two, this is on the way to the New York City Marathon. I've gotten through the build. I haven't had any injuries. I'm feeling good. And I fall down the freaking stairs. Like, you've got to be kidding me. So I'm trying to play it cool. And I'm like, you know what? Just, it's fine. It's probably fine. And my foot just starts aching, and it's just absolutely throbbing, and it's so painful, and I'm trying to like ignore it and pretend like it's not there. The whole drive to the airport, you know, we get out of the car with our stuff. I'm like using my suitcase as a crutch basically to get through the airport. And then we have, you know, a 5-6 hour flight where we're just sitting. So I was like, okay, hopefully just sitting on the flight when we get there, it's going to be fine. And, you know, we land and it's a little sore walking around, but it definitely felt better. So I was like, you know what, I'm going to ignore this right now. We landed at Newark. We took the train into the city. We checked into our hotel and then we got soup dumplings for dinner across the street, which was so good. And then I had the opportunity to be on a panel with Puma Running and the new magazine Run Her, which is founded by Ashley Mateo, and it's the first publication. It's going to be a quarterly publication. That's a magazine specifically dedicated to women's running. So really, really incredible new publication. And I was on the women's panel that was talking about some of her pillars of the magazine. So community, competition, those are a couple that we talked about. So super fun event at the Puma flagship store in New York City. Loved getting to be a part of that. Had a great time at that event. And then after the event, we walked back to our hotel and I still hadn't taken my shoe off at this point. So I have no idea what I'm dealing with my foot, but it's feeling better overall. I'm like, okay, I think it's going to be fine. And I take my shoe and my sock off and the whole top of my foot is just a giant bruise, but it's feeling better. So I'm like, okay, you know what? I think it's going to be fine. We'll just see how it feels in the morning. So, you know, we get up on Friday morning, Nick and I go for just a little shakeout run in Central Park. Thankfully, foot felt totally fine. You know, a little sore where my laces were rubbing, but like my ankle, you know, was a little bit stiff. Overall, completely fine. So all that to say, that was an eventful start to the trip. I was like, no, this is not going to be the end of the road to running the New York City Marathon. Everything was fine. Foot bruise is going away. We're good. But anyway, I just wanted to share that because I feel like this happens to a lot of athletes that I talk to and work with, where there's just some freak thing that comes up on race week. And it just happens, you know, and it was a good distraction from nerves. So there you go. So foot aside, foot's good. We're good to go. It's Friday. We went on our shakeout run in Central Park, felt great, had a blast, weather's perfect. And then we went and met some of our old team boss teammates who were all in New York City for the weekend for brunch. So we got to see Emma Coburn, Emma Bates, and Aisha, which was so much fun. So we spent like 2 hours at this restaurant just catching up and just really enjoying getting to see each other again. And we haven't all been together in like over a year. So it was really fun to have everybody there and just so nice to see friends and to catch up. So we did that. And then we went straight from there to the expo. So if you're not familiar with how major marathons, or at least New York City Marathon, works, is that when you arrive in the city at some point, you know, in the days leading up to the race, there's this big expo at a big venue, and you go and you pick up your bib number, you get, you know, your t-shirt, and you can go get merch. And there's usually a big expo hall set up where a bunch of different brands are there. So there was like Hyper Ice and Hoka and, you know, Fuel, like Morton was there, and just a lot of things that are relevant for runners. So we went over to the expo hall and it was insane. It was just, you know, thousands of people going there to get their bibs. They run it really efficiently. Obviously they do this every year. But it was just crazy, you know, seeing all the people. You're waiting in line to go get in line to get your bib. Then you have to get back in line to exit. And that means you have to go through the entire merch area, which of course we ended up buying something, which, you know, that was the plan. And you should celebrate your marathon and get something to remind you of it. I got a really fun t-shirt that I'm excited about. You know, and then you get back in line to exit. And then yeah, so it was a lot, but it was fun. And I think my biggest piece of advice in hindsight, which I think we did this well, but I would definitely recommend going to the expo if you can 2 days before the race. So we went on Friday and the race was on Sunday. I think it would have been a lot to go on Saturday. It's a lot of walking around. It's a lot of standing in line. And I think just in terms of the actual overstimulation that you feel when you walk out of the expo venue, I was ready to like go lay down in the hotel, and I was glad we had kind of an extra day. So I'm really happy we chose to do it that way. We signed up for that expo on, you sign up for which day and time you want to go and get your bib. So if that's in your travel plans, if you're going to be there, you know, at least 2 days early, I highly recommend going to the expo to get your bib 2 days out. Friday was also day one of our carb load. So I've talked about carb loading on here a little bit before, But basically, this is defined as consuming 10 to 12 grams of carbohydrates per kilogram of body weight for about 2 to 3 days out from the event. So because I am somebody who is consistently eating enough carbs, this is something that I've been really intentional about throughout my entire marathon block and leading up to the race itself. I only needed to do a 2-day carb load. So a big benefit to consistently eating enough carbs is that your carb load is a lot easier to execute, and it doesn't need to be as extreme because there's not as much of a deficit. So our carb load started on Friday. I got, you know, like a really big French toast order at brunch, had snacks throughout the day. I got a bagel sandwich and a lemonade at lunch. So I really relied heavily on liquid carbs. That was a huge, huge help because I definitely noticed I was feeling pretty full and I didn't want to make myself feel overly full or uncomfortable, but I knew I had quite a bit more carbs to get in. So I had lemonade with my lunch. Dinner, we met Nick's family at a Thai restaurant. I got pad see ew, which if you're not familiar with that, that's my go-to order at any Thai restaurant. It's so good. It's sort of, it's not like a pad thai at all, actually. It's like a thicker rice noodle and you can get any protein with it. It's kind of a sweet soy sauce and it usually has like broccoli and egg in it. Really good, really simple, easy to digest and has a good amount of carbs since it is a little bit of a sweeter sauce. So I got that and I got Sprite. So yes, you can actually use soda to help with your carb load, obviously making sure you're still getting nutrient-dense sources in addition to that, but I didn't want to get Coke or anything because that has caffeine and that definitely keeps me up if I have it later in the day. So I got a Sprite. And then after we had dinner, we went to Magnolia Bakery. So I try to go every single time I'm in New York. They're like famous for their banana pudding, which that is not normally something I would get. I'm not normally like a banana pudding, banana cream pie person, but there is something about this banana pudding that is phenomenal and I love it and I crave it every time I'm in New York City. So of course we had to go to Magnolia Bakery and I got myself a container of the banana pudding to continue my carb load through the night. And I also got a cupcake for the day before the race. So definitely was like, okay, I'm ready for this carb load to be done. I kind of noticed I was hitting my max with sweets, which I'm normally someone who really likes sweets and I can usually eat things that are sweet all the time. So I thought it was interesting that one day into the carb load, I was already noticing like, okay, this is a lot of work. You know, it's a lot of carbs to get in. It takes a lot of effort. And I feel like generally when you're eating at restaurants, I just feel more full generally. Bigger portions and richer food and things like that. So I was definitely struggling to hit my carbs and I was doing my best to kind of keep track of where I was, which I never track things, but just for this carb load, I was taking a look at how many grams of carbs I'd eaten. And it definitely was a challenge. I had to get a couple Rice Krispie treats in at the end of the day, along with that banana pudding, which was a little tricky, but I did it. I got the carbs in on Friday. Saturday morning, I co-hosted a shakeout run with Chris Lee. Chris Lee was on the podcast before. He is the founder of Kinesis Integrated in Boulder. He's a strength and conditioning coach who works primarily with endurance athletes. He's awesome. So we co-hosted a shakeout run in New York City. And what was really fun is that, so Nick and I's families, both of our families came out for the weekend. Nick has 3 brothers. 2 of them live in New York and 1's in DC. So they took the train down and then his parents came in. And then he also has an uncle whose wife was running the race. So they were there. And then my parents came in and I had one of my best friends in Colorado who also had flown in. Her brother lives in New York and she was like, oh, I'll just come and visit him and watch you in the marathon. So we had a really big crew and they took up a good portion of the shakeout run, which was so much fun just to show up and see everybody there and get to say hi. And it was so fun. So we had a really good group that was there. We did a beautiful run through Central Park. We kind of stayed on the softer surfaces, which was really nice. And the fall colors were gorgeous. It was such a nice weekend, like temperatures in the mid 50s. So I was comfortably running in shorts and a long sleeve. And you know, coming from LA right before we left, it was in the mid 90s. So it was so nice to have that cool fall weather. That's definitely something I'm really missing this time of year is just that season. You know, obviously there are seasons in LA, but it's just a little different and the temperature changes aren't as extreme and you don't see fall colors. So I was definitely missing those. shows, and it was really fun to get to run around Central Park and just kind of take in the feel of the weekend. It was also the morning of the 5K, so we got to see a little bit of the 5K and just see the energy that was going to be at the finish line the next day. So it definitely got me super hyped up for the race. After the shakeout run, we went with my parents to grab some breakfast, and then we went back to the hotel just to lay around and lounge. We had an early dinner planned with Nick's family. We had gone to a bagel place to get some bagels for lunch. So, you know, continuing that carb load, definitely was getting, like I said, tired of the sweet stuff. So for my breakfast that day, I had gotten potatoes and toast and orange juice to kind of go the more savory route. And then, yeah, we had bagels and cream cheese, and I got another juice to go with that lunch. Dinner, we met Nick's family for an Italian meal, which was great. So I got some pasta, which, you know, I always love pasta, so that was easy to get down. And then we just headed back to the hotel, got back to the hotel around 7:30, and had my cupcake to finish off my carb load for the night. And we spent the evening just kind of getting things together, getting ready for the race. So another one of my big hacks for runners is to pack all of your stuff up and lay it all out the night before, which I'm sure a lot of you already do this, but I kind of learned this in college when it would be time to get up in the morning. I'm a snoozer. I always hit snooze on my alarm, and then I find myself with less time than I want in the morning. So know yourself. Knowing myself, I was like, okay, I need to do all this the night before. So I put my bib on my singlet top. You know, I laid out my socks, my shoes, the warm-ups that I was wearing. I packed my bag, got that all ready to go, so that in the morning, all we had to do was like wake up, grab our stuff, and head out the door. So a couple other things that I learned about major marathons, and for the New York Marathon specifically, there's only a specific bag that's allowed into the entire start village. So they give you, when you check in and you get your bib at the expo, they give you this clear plastic bag, drawstring plastic bag. That's the only bag that you are allowed to bring. And they do have some restrictions in terms of bringing like a backpack, or if you're carrying your own fluids, there are restrictions on how much you can carry. So how big the water bottles are, or if you have a bladder in your pack, those actually aren't allowed. So do keep that in mind when you're practicing with your fueling and your hydration. There are restrictions on what you're allowed to bring to the marathon. So definitely look up their rules and regulations beforehand, so you know how to practice and make sure that you're not practicing with something that you're not going to be able to use on race day. One thing that I actually had, so I had my fall marathon group coaching program go from July until October. And one of the women in the program had run New York City, and she really came through for me on this one. She recommended that I bring a handheld that we can toss to carry for the first, you know, 4 or 5 miles, because the traffic to get to the aid stations, it's just crazy. There's so many people, it's really hard to do that. So Nick got us these little cheap $8 handheld bottles that just kind of clip onto your shorts. And it was like an 8-ounce bottle, maybe a little more. And we had those for the race. So I got those ready. I used Scratch in both of them. I did a half scoop in each one and put those in the fridge overnight so they'd be cold in the morning. My plan for fueling the morning of is to do a bagel with cream cheese and a banana. And then I got a disposable water bottle to put Scratch in as well. So that was my plan for the morning, kind of got everything ready, put as much as I could in that bag. You know, alarm goes off at 4 a.m. and you're tired, but it's race day, so you're ready to go. So, you know, get out of bed, get ready. And another thing to keep in mind is that it's going to be kind of a wait in terms of the time between leaving your hotel and actually starting the race. So you want to have warm-ups on and things like that, but you won't get them back at the end of the race, which I had never really thought about. So you have to wear clothes that you can donate when you go to the race, because at the like corral before you start, there's a donation bin where you drop your clothes before you head out to the start line, because there's not going to be anyone bringing 70,000 people's clothes back to the start line, let alone finding those. So you can pre-check items if you want things to pick up at the finish line. You know, some people will pre-check like sandals and a snack and maybe a sweatshirt or something, so they can pick those up at the finish line and put them on. But generally speaking, I would just plan for wearing something that you're going to donate, because even if you check something to pick up at the finish line, you have to pre-check it the day before. So it's not going to be anything that you can wear the morning of the race. It's going to be something that you'll have access to afterwards. I had my parents who were flying in bring me some clothes from my room back at home. So it was a slightly snug pair of sweatpants from high school and a sweatshirt from college. So I was looking real cool heading up to the bus, and we got all our stuff together, headed out the door, and the getting on the buses was definitely a little bit of chaos, understandably so. I think what I maybe would have done differently, we signed up for the 5:30 bus. So we were wave one, which the start time was 9:10. And we had two options for our buses. We had a 5 a.m. and a 5:30 a.m. bus option. We chose the 5:30 a.m. option because it still gives you plenty of time to get there and hang out. But it takes a long time to get on the bus. There are so many people there. It took us a while to even find where the line was. People were just kind of like creating random lines and standing in random lines. I think in hindsight, I probably would have done the 5 a.m. bus just to get there a little bit earlier and potentially have less of a crowd. But either way, just expect that it's going to be a while. Like the bus, you're not going to get on the bus at 5:30. We didn't get on the bus until around 6:15, and we left our hotel at 5. So it was kind of a long morning getting on the bus. But my kind of mantra in that moment was like, okay, they have to get everybody across because they have to close the bridge. So we're not going to get left behind. They're not going to start the race without us. You're going to get on the bus when you get on the bus. Just, you know, try to stay calm and focus on the things that you have control over, which in that moment was my fueling and my hydration. So I started eating my bagel and cream cheese while we were standing in line, and was sipping on my electrolytes while we were waiting. We finally got on the bus, and, you know, it takes about an hour, a little more, to get over to Staten Island because there is a lot of traffic and there's a lot of buses. But it's nice once you're on the bus, you can kind of relax. One thing I was worried about, whenever I start drinking a lot of electrolytes and I'm nervous, I have to pee constantly. So I was really worried about that with the bus. But you take those like tour buses, so there are bathrooms on the bus. So that was a relief. That was like, okay, I can keep drinking my electrolytes. It doesn't matter if I have to pee. I'm not gonna have to hold it. Like, it's gonna be fine. So as you're driving over to Staten Island, it's beautiful. It's just like the sunrise over New York City. You know, you're crossing over the Verrazano Bridge, and it was just beautiful. So really cool. You know, as you're getting closer, you kind of start to feel all the anticipation of everybody on the bus. You get off the bus, and then you're immediately in another line to get into the start village. So it's a lot of standing and walking and waiting around. And I was kind of surprised that we didn't have as much time as I thought we would. You know, I thought with the 5:30 bus, we'd get there by 7 and we'd have, you know, 2 hours to sit around and wait. By the time we got in through the line and found our starting corral, it was already 8:20 and our start corral closed at 8:45. So we definitely didn't have a lot of extra time, which honestly I'm fine with, especially because there's just not a ton of places to sit and you're just kind of sitting on cold cement or, you know, whatever. So we just did a little bit of a warm-up jog. You know, I did maybe like a 10-minute easy jog. There's so many bathrooms and things like that in there, so that wasn't an issue. I was definitely concerned about like porta potty lines, but there really weren't that many because there's so many bathrooms there. So, you know, you're waiting for a little bit, but it moves pretty quickly. And then you have to get into your start corral, and then they close the corral. We got in there, you know, there were porta potties in the corral. So that was another thing I was worried about, was, is my last chance to pee at 8:45, and then I have to wait 30 minutes until we actually start, knowing I'll definitely have to pee again because I'm nervous. But no, there are bathrooms in the corral, so you can use those all the way up until you're let out to the start line. So that was good to know. And then, like I said, you kind of take off your gear, you put it in the donation bin, and you get going. So after they open up the corral to go to the start line, you're led out to the Verrazano Bridge, and it's just a sea of people. Like, if you look straight ahead, you can just see these thousands of people kind of snaking like a river all the way up to the start line. And it was really cool because we could see the pro men on the start line. They had a big screen up, so we got to see Joe Klecker was somebody Nick and I both went to see you with. So it was really fun to see him on the start line a little further back and just see the pro men get ready for their start. And then you see everybody else, and there are so many people, and it was just so cool. The energy was incredible. Everybody was so excited for their race to start. You know, people are helping each other with pins, and in hydration and gels and just all the things. It's such a community on that start line. And it's kind of like that trauma bonding where everybody is about to go through something really hard and really respects everyone else in that setting for doing what we're about to do. So just really incredible energy. They start playing Frank Sinatra and, you know, the gun goes off. And it took us 3.5 minutes to get to the mat to start from the time the gun went off. So just keep in mind, it's going to be a little bit of a shuffle to get up there, especially with that many people. But we get up to the start mat and we're on our way. And the Verrazano Bridge, which is the first bridge that takes you from Staten Island over... I'm going to butcher all of this geography. I can tell you that right now. I want to say into Manhattan. I am not the best with directions or geography. I'm going to be honest with you, but I'm going to do my best. So anyway, you come over the Verrazano Bridge. And again, the sun is still kind of rising. It's like this beautiful golden color. You're running over a river. There were like police helicopters at eye level on both sides, which was crazy. And there's just thousands of people. It took a good while to kind of settle into a bit of a pace because you're just weaving through people that entire first mile. And of course, the first mile is uphill. So everyone warned us about that. Everyone was like, you need to be really conservative with that first mile. And we had kind of a pace plan in mind because our goal was to try to run sub 3 hours. So we had kind of looked at some pace charts and things like that. And like a conservative goal would be to try to run around 129.30 or 130 at the half. And most people said that means your first mile in New York should be around 7:30. So we were like, oh, that's going to be so doable. Weaving through people was a lot of work, and our first mile was a 7:50. So it was a little bit slower than we planned, but we were like, you know what? It's okay. It was crowded. We're going to make up for it a little bit later. It's fine. So the second mile is the second half of the Verrazano Bridge where you're going downhill. And this is where everyone's like, don't go crazy. You're going to wreck your quads if you try to make up too much time. So looking at the pace charts, we were trying to go somewhere around like 7:30 and then 6:40. And we were 6:50. So we were closer and we were like, okay, you know, we're still weaving through a lot of people. I have to say at this point in the race, I was still surprised how crowded it was. I, in my mind, kind of thought it was going to maybe clear up a little bit after that first mile, but it really didn't. It was still incredibly crowded. I was very glad that we had the handheld bottles because I don't even remember seeing an aid station at that point. And our what we had practiced with was taking a few sips of electrolytes every mile. And that over the course of our long runs worked out to be around 600 milliliters of fluid per hour, which was my goal. So I was really glad we had those handhelds. Just took a few sips every mile. You know, we're starting to work our way down a little bit to race pace, which is around 6:50. And we did. We were running around high 6:40s, low 6:50s, and we were feeling good. You know, we were like, okay, this is feeling good. We're cruising, we're settling into a pace. The energy was just crazy. The crowds that were out there cheering. It went by, the first really like 6 to 8 miles went by so fast, and I was feeling so good. We took our first gel around 4.5 miles, about 30 minutes, went down smoothly, no problem, finished up our handheld bottles around mile 5 or 6, so that all went super smoothly. And then we start climbing a little bit, and I was like, ooh, I don't know, like I feel like I'm breathing a little too hard this early on in the race. Like if I was breathing that hard at mile 16, I'd be like, okay, you know, that makes sense. But it was mile 9 and I was like, you know, I don't know. So I said to Nick, I was like, I think I'm working a little too hard. And then we saw our mile and it was around, I think that one was close to like a 7 flat mile. And so at this point we're kind of feeling that sub 3 hour goal slip away. Between our first 2 miles being slower than we planned and then having that 1 mile be a little bit slower, we were like, ooh, I don't know. So we kind of slowed down a little bit because my goal, my biggest goal for the marathon was to finish feeling strong and having fun. I did not want this to be a death march. I did not want to blow up. I didn't want to be miserable. I didn't want to question if I wanted to step off the course. And that was so much more worth it to me than to try to kill myself to run sub 3 hours, which it became pretty clear around that mile 9 that we just did not train enough for that. You know, looking back, somebody had asked me, would I have done anything differently in preparing for the race? And the short answer is no, I wouldn't have, because a big part of doing New York Marathon for me wasn't about running a time. It was about doing it for the charity and doing it for fun and just doing it for the experience. And of course, that competitive athlete side of myself is like, we need to set a time goal. We need to train for something specific. But that didn't feel super pressing to me because I was really just wanting to have fun. And I also wasn't really ready to commit to the training that I would need to run a fast marathon. You know, the mileage that's required would be quite a bit higher than what we were running. We would really need to be doing more structured workouts, more race pace workouts. And I am so happy with the training that we did. Like, I had so much fun with the training that we did. We got in a long run every week. We built from, you know, 10 up to 20. I felt super good about the way that we did our training. So the answer to would I have done anything differently, like yes and no. If I really wanted to try to break 3 hours, then yes, I would have trained differently. I probably would have done more intense workouts and I would have tried to do a little bit more race specific pace. We really only did maybe like 5 workouts that were race pace, which, you know, obviously in hindsight is pretty delusional that we actually thought we were ready to run sub 3 hours. I kept saying like, I don't expect my past as a runner to carry over into the marathon, but I think I did a little bit. I think I was kind of like, you know, I do have 15 plus years of training. That's probably going to carry me through this race a little bit more. So I don't need to train as hard, which in hindsight was not the smartest way to look at it. And it wasn't that we needed to train differently. I think we just needed to set a different goal based on the training that we did. So I don't know if that answers the question, but yes, if I had really wanted to break 3 hours, I would have trained a bit differently. I also probably would have tried to do a little bit more mileage. I did around 30, 35 miles a week. I think I had two or three weeks that were in the 40s. So I really didn't run a ton of mileage. And that's not to say that you can't run a marathon off of low mileage. We did it. But it definitely made it harder, I think, in the moment and made it all that much harder to try to break 3 hours. So I think once we kind of accepted that we didn't do the training to run sub 3 hours, we just decided to have fun. We settled into what we called quote unquote fun pace. And so that ended up being around 7 flat pace, which felt really good. It felt really manageable. It felt really smooth. You know, it felt like we were running strong and still having fun. And, you know, I was kind of taking a look at my heart rate and trying to keep it, you know, under 170 for sure. And it had kind of been creeping up to 170. So once we slowed down a little bit, it was more like high 150s, low 160s, which I think was a little more appropriate for me for the marathon. So we hit that halfway mark at 131.30. And that's when it really was confirmed. We were like, okay, we're really not going to be able to run a super negative split here. Let's just have fun and settle in and just enjoy the marathon. So we did. You know, we took our gels every 30 minutes, which was about every 4.5 miles, give or take. And yeah, it was just incredible. Like, the whole race was shocking how fast it went by. I was definitely intimidated by the fact that we were about to run 26.2 miles because obviously in training, like, long runs to me feel long always. It doesn't matter what the distance is. Like, they always feel long. This really didn't. Like, it went by so fast. You know, all of a sudden, we're at that 16-mile mark where you're hitting the Queensboro Bridge. And this was the section in the course that everyone was like, this is the hardest section because spectators can't get onto the bridge. And it's kind of an enclosed bridge a little bit. And it's a big uphill. So it's just dead silent. And you can just hear every single person breathing hard, shoes hitting the pavement. I could hear somebody gagging. Like, it was tough in there. But I weirdly really liked that part of the race. I don't know if that was the kind of previous competitive athlete side of myself coming out. But it was just this like group mentality where we were all grinding together. And it was fun. Like, I was having fun. And then as you get to the top and you start to come down the other side into Brooklyn, maybe, I want to say. As you come down into Brooklyn, we'll go with Brooklyn, you can hear the roar of the crowd like half a mile out. So you're already feeling fired up. Now you're going downhill. People are kind of sporadically cheering for everybody, you know, within the group of runners, people would be like, let's go. And then everyone would be like, woo, you know, and it was just really fun. Like I had fun on that stretch of the course. So if you're going to run New York in the future and people are talking about, oh, Queensboro Bridge, like, yeah, it's hard, but it's actually kind of a fun hard, you know? So I enjoyed that. I actually ran into somebody who listens to the podcast on the bridge and we chatted for a second, got a little selfie. So that was super fun. But yeah, I had a blast that part of the race. You come out into Brooklyn and it's just incredible energy. You know, five people deep lined all through the entire course. There's music, there is people cheering, there's funny signs. I think my favorite sign that I saw said all toenails go to heaven. So that was a good one. But we, you know, people have their own water bottles that they're handing out to people, like plastic sealed water bottles, not like their personal water bottles, but people are handing out water bottles and things like that. And it's fun. And then you go over another bridge, the Willis Avenue Bridge, I want to say. And that was where the race started to get a little tough for me. So you're going uphill into the sun. At that point, you know, it's like 10, 11 o'clock. The sun's kind of beating down. I was feeling a little warm, although I will say it was not a hot day. The weather was absolutely perfect. But I was just kind of feeling that like, okay, you know, I'm getting a little tired, getting a little hot. And then I was kind of feeling a little more in a little bit more of a negative headspace. So somebody had asked me like, how do you push through when it's tough? This was probably one of the tougher moments of the race from like, and this is going to sound funny saying this, but from mile 18, 19 to mile like 24, it was really, really hard. And, you know, I've always heard like, oh, the marathon starts at mile 20. And I would agree with that. It felt really long, but I was really just trying to focus again on the things that I could control. So it would be like, okay, you know, you're going to take your gel here in a second. And when you get to this aid station, you're going to grab water. I was kind of alternating between water and Gatorade on the course. So I was drinking something every single mile. When I grabbed a cup, I was taking a few sips every time. You know, I always tell people if you're using on-course fluids, the biggest key is that you don't want to chug the fluids. You also don't want to feel like you have to finish the whole cup. And you want to be really careful about swallowing air. So when you take a sip, like hold it in your mouth for a second and let out the air so that you're not swallowing a bunch of air. That's how you end up with more GI issues. So I was kind of going by feel at that point because my gels had 200 milligrams of sodium per gel. Somebody asked what gels I used. I used Never Second gels and I really liked them. They had 30 grams of carbs per gel plus 200 milligrams of sodium. Taking those every 30 minutes. And then I was alternating aid stations between Gatorade and water. Towards the end, I was mostly just taking water because I knew I was getting enough carbs and electrolytes. And my mouth was starting to feel just that kind of like over-sugared feeling. So I just was really craving water, but I tried to take Gatorade at least a couple more times. So I was just trying to break up the course at that point in my mind and just remind myself that I'm tough. I can handle hard things. I was trying to distract myself with other things, you know, outside of the pain that I was feeling. So like looking around at the view and the crowd and high-fiving people or whatever, like doing things to kind of help pull me out of my own head. Because what I've found in the past is when races get hard, if I get too much in my head, I become my own worst enemy and I'm kind of fighting myself. And I didn't want to be there. I wanted, like I said, I wanted this race to be really fun and enjoyable. And so those were the moments that were definitely the hardest. And when I saw, you know, mile 24, I was like, okay, there's 2 miles left. You can run 2 miles. Here we go. Like, we're going to do this. And I will say throughout the entire race, my body felt great. I didn't have any issues with cramping. I didn't have anything that was hurting or tightening up. You know, I think my hip got a little tight for a couple miles and then it went away. I was feeling like my body wasn't breaking down. It was really more from an aerobic standpoint. There was a demoralizing moment when a man in a pizza costume passed me, so that was a little sad. And then we got passed by the 305 pacer and I was like, oh my God, like we're not even gonna break 310 at this point. Like, this is so hard. So I had a couple of moments where I was feeling sorry for myself and having a little bit of a pity party, but I did what I could to pull myself out and focus on the wins. So that win for me was my body was feeling good. And the other win was that my stomach felt great. I had zero issues with my stomach. did not have to stop for the bathroom at all, even to pee, which was surprising for me because I always have to stop on long runs at least once to pee. I have a small bladder, I feel like. But that didn't happen. I made it through the entire race. And even afterwards, I had no stomach issues. I was able to go and eat a big meal and was totally fine. So that was a huge, huge win, was executing my fueling exactly how I planned and my hydration exactly how I planned. I had no issues in general, which was amazing. So we get to mile, 25. That was probably the longest mile I've ever run, going from mile 25 to 26. But as you come up, you're going into Central Park, you're kind of entering where the grandstands are, the crowd is getting louder. And then one thing I didn't mention throughout this whole time is our families and our friends were out there cheering for us the whole time. And it was so uplifting to see them. It was like the highlight of the race to be running and to hear Maddie, go Maddie, and you look over and it's like my mom and my dad, or it's Nick's brothers, or it's his parents. My best friend was there. I ran by and we like grabbed each other and screamed, and then I kept running. And it's cool when you watch the videos of the spectators. It's kind of like cross country. Like, they go through so much to be there to watch you for 10 seconds run by. But that 10 seconds that you get to see them, like, makes your race. And so if you have somebody who's going to be running a major marathon, I really encourage you, if you can, like, go watch them. It means the world to have those people there for you. And it just makes your entire race, even though you're only seeing them a couple times for 10 seconds. Those were my favorite parts of the race. Somebody asked what my favorite part was, and it was seeing friends and family on the course. And I actually saw, like, one of my old CU teammates was out there cheering. People from the Fueling Forward community were cheering. We saw Emma Bates out there. So it was just so special to have people there supporting you. And it just reminds you, like, it takes a village to get to the start line and to get to the finish line. And it's just such a special thing. And those moments were just so fun for me. And I think the last time we saw our family was around mile 22. And it was just amazing. That was my highlight of the race for sure, was seeing friends and family out on the course. And then obviously my last highlight was finally finishing the race. I have never been so ready to cross a finish line in my life. But you come into Central Park, it is a lot of rolling hills. So you start to feel those hills. Like, when you're coming up Fifth Ave, it's a gradual hill, but it's getting you, because you're really at the end of the race and it starts to feel really hard. So I was kind of breaking it down by getting to the top of the hill and then kind of using the downhill to shake out and relax a little bit. We kind of come up the rolling hills into Central Park, and then you get a little bit of downhill to the finish line, which was so nice. And so, we finish, and it was just the most incredible feeling to finish the marathon. I felt so accomplished, and I loved every second of it. I really did. It was truly just such an amazing experience. And so I crossed the line in 3:07:48, and I technically beat Nick somehow by 3 seconds. He finished in 3:07:51. So I now hold the Harris family marathon record. So there we go. But yeah, I mean, we were, a little off of that sub-3-hour goal. And again, like, would I do anything differently? Honestly, no. And somebody asked me if I was disappointed to not run sub-3 hours. I truly wasn't. I thought I would be. I really thought I would be. But it was such a hard race. And again, I was very humbled by the fact that we learned so early on that we did not train enough to run sub-3 hours. And I think if I truly thought I could run sub-3 hours and was able to run that pace for most of the race, and then something happened where I hit a wall or I had to stop or whatever, and I didn't run that time, I would have been disappointed. But I didn't feel disappointed because I knew I ran exactly what I could have run on the day. And the race went about as smoothly as it could have gone. Nick and I talked about this after the fact. We were like, we should have probably, just in hindsight, run with the 3:05 pacer, which he was running 7:03s, and that probably would have been perfect. We probably could have stayed with him the whole time and maybe squeezed it down a little bit at the end and run around 3:05 or just under. But we were like, what? That doesn't really make a huge difference. Like, whether I ran 3:07 or 3:05, to me, doesn't mean a ton at this point, because it's my first marathon and I didn't really know what to expect. But I was just so proud of myself for getting through it and for staying positive and for executing my fueling and just, like, overall having the perfect day that I could have had. Like, I checked all my boxes outside of that time on the clock. So at the end of the day, it doesn't matter to me that I didn't hit that time because I did everything else exactly how I wanted to. I had fun. I didn't blow up. I didn't kill myself to run a certain time. I was able to enjoy it. My body didn't break down. My stomach felt great. I got in all my fuel and hydration. So that's so many wins. The time on the clock is just such a small part of that weekend that I'm not dwelling on it. You know, I feel good about it. I feel happy about the race. I'm so proud of myself. Really loved the experience. So no, I'm really not disappointed. And, you know, do I think I could run sub 3 hours? Like, yeah, if I had trained differently, I think I could have. But the question is, did I want to train differently? And the answer to that is no. I trained the amount that I wanted to train and I'm happy with it. I'm very happy with it. So yeah, you finish, you cross the line, you get a little poncho thing, which was honestly so nice. It's like fleece lined. It's really great. You get a finisher's medal. The hardest part of the weekend for me was the walk from the finish line out of Central Park to find our family. It was like, felt like, I think it might've been close to a mile. It's like you're looking at a field of zombies in orange ponchos walking out of the park. Everyone is just waddling and suffering and just trying to get out of the park to find their families. That was the hardest part of the race for me, was afterwards, walking out of the park. But after we walked out, all of our families were waiting there. Everyone was cheering. We all hugged. It was so great. We all got food. And then that night we went out to ramen to celebrate, which that was the best choice I've ever made, is requesting that we go to ramen after the race. Nothing's ever tasted better. It was salty. It was savory. It was like broth. So it was like hydrating and rich, and it was so good. So we got some post-race ramen and went to bed, you know, woke up Monday morning, hands down the most sore that I've ever been, but surprisingly has gone away pretty quickly. You know, I'm recording this on Thursday and my body is like feeling pretty good. Like, I don't have the desire to run right now, but if I had to run, I could. And I do think a big part of that is the fueling, because we did such a good job with that. My body has felt great ever since. So I just wanted to re-summarize my fueling for the weekend, because I feel like I was kind of all over the place with that description. But I started my carb load 2 days out and focused on getting 10 to 12 grams of carbohydrates per kilogram of my body weight for that 48 hours prior to the race. The day before, I really focused on simple carbs, really making sure to limit my fiber. I had maybe one fruit or vegetable that day. Really wanted to make sure I was limiting fiber to prevent any GI issues. We had an early dinner around 5 or 5:30, and then I had a high carb snack before bed, which was a cupcake. And then the morning of the race at 5:30, I ate my bagel with cream cheese. I sipped on about 16, 17 ounces of electrolytes just in one of those disposable water bottles between 5:30 and about 8 o'clock. So finished that about an hour before the start. And then when we were waiting in line to get into the start village, I had my banana. So that was around 7:30, 7:45, and I had some fruit snacks. And then about 8:45, so just under half an hour out from the start, I had a caffeine gel. And then during the race, I took a gel every 30 minutes and alternated between taking water and electrolytes out on the course. I carried a handheld with scratch electrolytes with carbs the first 5 miles to help better just navigate those aid stations when it's a little more crowded. And the gels worked out to be about 60 grams of carbs per hour and another 400 milligrams of sodium, averaged probably around 500 to 600 milliliters of fluids per hour, which was exactly my goal. And I took a caffeinated gel at about halfway in the race, and that all went super well for me. Yeah, I think overall, my biggest takeaways are plan for a lot of lines, a lot of waiting around, and just try to find peace within that. Get to places earlier than you think you need to. That was definitely a big learning curve for us. I mean, we were early, but like a little earlier would have been good. Do the best that you can with what you have. You know, if you're walking around a lot, don't panic. Just try to rest when you can. Get your carbs in as best as possible. Stay hydrated and you're going to be fine. Execute that fueling plan in the race. That was probably the absolute number one biggest thing for me, was being able to execute that. And in the race itself, not focusing on that time goal, especially if it's slipping away, because that can cause you to kind of like panic and sort of blow up a little bit. I think that happened to me a lot as a pro. If I felt like I was so far away from hitting the time I wanted to, I really started to get in my head. So just focus on the things you can control, focus on the wins in that moment. And then one last logistic that I would recommend. So I wore my GPS watch and so did Nick, but Nick was splitting his watch manually at the miles. We had completely different mile splits by the end and completely different distances. So my watch said we ran 26.6 miles and my mile splits were probably about 10 seconds faster than his were manually splitting them at the mile. So something to think about for pacing, just maybe manually splitting or just knowing your GPS is not going to be accurate, especially if you're weaving through people. They do have a blue dotted line in the middle of the course. That's the tangent. So that's the shortest distance. That's the 26.2. That's where it's measured. So if you can, try to run as close to that blue line as possible. But just know it's not going to be possible to be on it the whole time because there's so many people. But overall, fantastic experience. Thank you to everyone who was part of the event. Thank you to everyone who donated. Thank you to our friends and family for coming out to support us. And again, thank you so much to Track Girls and to Hedda's for this opportunity. Both brands are incredible, looking to push women's sports forward. So if you're looking to make any donation to support women's sports, I highly recommend checking out Track Girls. You can donate at any time. And if you're looking for a shoe designed for women by women, checking out Hedda's. Highly recommend running New York if you get the opportunity. Such a special weekend, such a special place, and just so much fun. So I hope you guys enjoyed hearing a little bit about our experience. If you have any marathons coming up, I'm going to be hosting another marathon group coaching program. One of the women in the program was at New York with me, and she ran 5 minutes faster than her goal, which was really cool to see. And she said she felt like fueling was a big part of that as well. So really, you know, don't underestimate how much that fueling can do for you. I just have so much fun working with marathoners, and I'm really excited to start the second group marathon program. So if that's something you're interested in, check that out on the website. And otherwise, next week is going to be a fun guest on the podcast. His name is Bobby Stuckey. He's a restaurant owner in Boulder, and he's just a really fun person to talk to. He tries to run a marathon every year, and it's really fun hearing his take on food as somebody in the hospitality industry. So I hope to see you guys next week, and thanks again for being with me on this journey to run New York. Thanks so much for listening to today's episode of the Fueling Forward podcast. If you'd like to submit a question in the future for a Q&A episode, you can do so on my website at www.fuelingforward.com under the podcast tab, or you can email me at fuelingforwardpodcast@gmail.com. Next week's episode will be with Bobby Stuckey, who is a restaurant owner and marathoner based out of Boulder, Colorado. Hope to see you next week. Thanks for being here, and I'll see you at the next Fueling Forward Friday.